Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Let's get ethical, ethical. I want to get ethical. Let's get into ethics, yeah. Let me hear your Dunder Mifflin talk.
Hell yeah.
Your body talk. Let me hear your body
Hello
talk.
Hello and welcome to our summer special on 3CR Community Radio. On the show today, I'm Nick from Freedom of Species, and yeah, this gives us a time to talk about issues that don't fit with our usual show, don't fit with the animal rights issues we usually cover on Freedom of Species, because I think I can speak for all of us hosts when I say that we're interested in a wide range of different topics, not just animal rights. On the show today, we're joined by two regular guests and guest hosts of Freedom of Species, Lottie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Hayden.
Thanks for having me.
And yeah, I guess I will pass it over to Lottie, who's going to, maybe I should say first up, we started up with a clip, Let's Get Ethical from The Office, because we are talking about ethics, but I guess I'll hand over to Lottie to talk about what specific ethics we're talking about.
Nice. That was a little surprise for me and Hayden, yeah. So I couldn't
get
control.
Hyped to the Freedom of Species theme song and then got even hyper to Let's Get Ethical.
I love it. So, yeah, today we're going to be talking about, technology generally, the supply chains of how our technology, how our devices are made, and the companies behind a lot of the programs and softwares that we use, trying to, inform people about really what's going on in the world and have some practical practical actions that people can take to try to consume a bit more ethically when it comes to the technology that we use.
Correct.
So I thought we'd kind of structure it in maybe like two halves. So the first is about like the hardware, so the actual devices that we hold in our hands. And then we're going to talk about more the software. So, yeah, like programs and things that we download onto our devices. So to start off, the main thing I'll be talking about is cobalt. So cobalt is a mineral that is used in rechargeable batteries in lots of our devices, all of our rechargeable devices basically. So mobile phones, laptops, tablets, and if you've got electric vehicles as well, cobalt is necessary currently to create the lithium ion batteries that are used in all these devices. So I'm drawing a lot from the book called Cobalt Red: How the Blood of the Congo Powers Our Lives by Siddharth Kara that I read last year. About 72% of the world's mined cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, and then most of the cobalt of the world is refined in China. So I'll just give a bit of a summary of what Siddharth Kara found and exposed in his book about how cobalt is mined in DRC. So DRC has both what we can call industrial and so-called artisanal mining. So industrial mining is maybe the mining that we're kind of used to in the modern world, using machines and following a more formal supply chain. But what they call artisanal mining, which is a kind of cutesy word for really a pretty horrific practice, in practice, is where individual people are using their hands and manual tools to mine. So what we think of as more archaic mining, I guess, still goes on to a large extent in DRC to mine cobalt. This might be in tunnels under the ground that are prone to collapsing, so that kills and injures a lot of people when these tunnels collapse. They're not, they're not formally built to be safe. They're just kind of.
There's no real like safety regulations or overseeing body that's going to make sure that these people are protected.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I would say while you're describing this as well, I don't know about in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, but you can find like on YouTube or just on the internet, you can find videos of. Like in different developing countries of the world, or third world countries of the world, people in mines like these so-called artisanal mines, and it's you can see videos of what the conditions are like, and it's absolutely if you're claustrophobic, it's gonna freak you out. It's absolutely terrifying to see the conditions these people have to work in every single day.
Yeah. As well as the people being killed and injured by. Tunnels collapsing or other injuries working mining. There's lots of there's heavy metals in the dirt that are poisoning the miners in the nearby neighborhoods, so that that causes a lot of illness and deaths too. And there's lots of children. So in the book Cobalt Red, Kara reported that he was seeing children, even 10 years and younger, who are mining for cobalt, including sometimes in tunnels. And, you know, a big reason for this is just because the cost of living is too high for lots of people in DRC. Going to school is too expensive, so it's more practical to where parents are just kind of forced to get their children to help with mining. They just don't make enough money. Like, you know, one or two parents working mining isn't going to be enough money to support their family. So a lot of children are driven to have to mine for cobalt as well. And then a bit about the supply chain. So what was outlined in that book is that often what happens with these so-called artisanal miners is that the diggers sell the cobalt that they mine to middlemen at a very low price. So a lot of people are just earning the equivalent of a few dollars a day. In lots of situations, women and children earn less just by default, the rate that they're going to get for a certain weight of mined cobalt is just going to be less than men. So there's also situations where these miners might be indentured labourers for a kind of manager figure. They're needing to pay off debts, so they're basically slaves with no freedom over their work, their wages and things like that. So then these kind of middlemen manager figures sell the cobalt to other middlemen. I'm not sure if it's necessary to come up with a gender neutral term because I think it is mostly men.
Brokers, right?
Brokers, I guess, what you'd say. Brokers are selling to other brokers. Eventually, the cobalt mined by these artisanal miners combines with the industrial mined cobalt, and then most of the cobalt that's mined from the DRC is sold to Chinese companies that refine the cobalt and then go on to sell them to tech companies who put them in the devices that we buy. So basically that's to say that there's just this really long, complicated supply chain from the person mining our cobalt to the brokers, the refiners, the tech companies, and then us, the consumers. So it's really easy to shirk responsibility at every point along that chain. So tech companies, can kind of say, even though they're the ones benefiting and profiting from the cobalt, they can kind of say, like, well, we have no, we have little, like, power over or, control over how it's mined.
I guess they're just marketing the final product, which looks nice and shiny, and you don't see what's behind it.
And what Siddharth Kara really emphasized in his book is that from what he saw, because of the way that artisanal cobalt is combined with industrial cobalt, and because of the fact that everywhere he went in DRC, there were cases of, you know, child labor, really dangerous working conditions, lack of regulation. It's just actually impossible to verify that any source of newly mined cobalt as industrial as opposed to artisanal, and therefore it's impossible to verify that any source of cobalt is free of child labor, free of dangerous tunnel mining, beneficial to the community, basically. So if any company claims that any of their newly mined cobalt is from ethical sources, it's a lie. There's just no way of verifying this. Mm. So it's a pretty terrifying, horrifying situation. It's pretty sad, and given that we live in a world where you know, that really revolve around our mobile phones and our laptops, it feels kind of hopeless to know what to do. There just really isn't any clear, easy ways to overcome this currently, but I think there are still some things we can do to try and you know, just work towards, you know, maybe a global movement where we're changing this situation, and at least not just living obliviously and enjoying our devices and our cushy lives without even, you know, thinking about what's going on in the world.
And I guess there's nothing inherent to the material that means that, right? Like, there could be regulation or there could
absolutely
be changes,
yeah,
but as it stands. Yeah. No,
well, I think a friend of mine works in the geosciences field and was talking to me about currently in Europe there's more demand for kind of more ethically sourced components for things. And so apparently Australia actually has a lot of rare earth metals, which are another thing that's used in a lot of electronics, and in most countries tend to be mined in similarly horrific ways. But in Australia, they're mined much more ethically and environmentally friendly, even though we don't consider that for mining. And so there's now a push in Europe to get, like, these components sourced from places like Australia, processed in places like Japan or Korea, where it's done more ethically as well, and then put into their devices so that there's more ethics for the materials in the supply chain. And so it's more just about the process for how you dig these up and how you process them than, yeah, it is the materials themselves.
Mm. And is that push coming from European governments or individuals or both? Or
I think it's a combination of consumers want a more ethical mm-hmm. product, mm. and so then governments are going to facilitate that.
Mm. Yeah. I guess also there's nothing inherent about like Africa, meaning that the cobalt there shouldn't be mined from there. And if we lived in a more just world, then the people of Africa, the workers, would have more power and benefit, and they would be able to profit appropriately mm-hmm. from the cobalt and the resources they have in their ground. And so, yeah, the way that it's currently mined, there's no concern for the local environment, the people. So it would be done differently, presumably, if they had more control over it. But it's, I guess, I think, you know, maybe mining in Australia would be a necessary kind of middle step, given that it's just not going to happen. It's just not current. The systems aren't currently set up that it could be, these minerals could be mined in countries like DRC in an ethical way. Mm. But, you know, like, African people should be, they shouldn't just be excluded from the world.
I'm not saying we should just
economy.
Have countries like Australia
yeah,
producing
exactly.
these things. I'm just
that,
saying that, like, it's possible to produce them in an ethical way.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's even, like, cost prohibitive.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the moment, like, for instance, in Africa, there's neocolonial systems which are set up to extract the wealth and not leave it in the country and not provide any care for the people who are providing the services there.
Yeah, mm. yeah.
And I guess we'll probably come across this issue a lot, but I guess there's like two different ways to address it of kind of trying to change those sort of global supply chains, that big change, and also individual as well. And yeah. I think, I guess, I'm sure the take-home message will be both, I guess, but I guess we're focused more on the individual actions today, I believe.
A little, I guess so. And I think, you know, individual actions can be, especially if we talk about what we're doing and try and educate other people, that might be, you know, contributing towards what eventually becomes systemic change. So I do have kind of practical individual actions that that we can kind of, you know, take on with the idea of working towards systemic change and supporting a global movement once, you know, if that arises. So, yeah, I think the first thing we should be doing is, talking about what's happening. So on that note, so educate people and show that, you know, we stand in solidarity with the people of Congo. And I think these next things that I have in mind, you know, if you're going to do these, do them kind of loudly and proudly and tell people that, oh, well, the reason that I'm, like not buying this new device is because of what's going on in Congo and things like that. So I think, so there's an app called Boycat app, and it's got some companies, it's got a few different issues. So Congo, Palestine, Sudan are three of the issues that they have listed, and then they list companies that are involved, that we should boycott, that are involved in kind of each of those atrocities that are going on in each of those places. So they do list some companies to boycott that are involved in DRC, but unfortunately, they don't list any ethical alternatives to these companies because, as far as I know, there aren't any. So I don't think there are any companies yet that are using completely recycled cobalt. And from what I said before, there's no way to verify that any new cobalt is ethically mined. So, you certainly can check that app to see what companies to boycott, but I'm not sure if, purchasing from any other company will be better. So the other actions I'm going to list are really about reducing the amount of new devices that we buy. So I think a first thing we can try and consider is just reducing the number of devices that we have and the number of products with rechargeable batteries. So before you buy, for example, a new smart home device, a smartwatch, a vape, if you vape, consider how much you need it. If it's
worth, vapes have this in it too.
Yeah, they have rechargeable batteries.
Batteries.
Oh, okay. So they have lithium ion batteries.
Disposable ones, which have their own environmental issues. But
yeah.
Wow. So you know, these are things that, in my perspective, we don't necessarily need as much as maybe we feel like we need a smartphone, for example, to participate in today's society. Think about how much you need these devices, if it's worth, contributing to this terrible supply chain. Another thing I think we should be doing, given that electric vehicles are contributing to a high amount of lithium-ion batteries, and electric vehicles are actually necessary replacements to petrol cars for climate reasons. I'm not saying that it's better to drive a petrol car than an electric vehicle. But if we walk, if we cycle, if we use public transport, this contributes to moving away from such a car-centric society. So that will alleviate the increasing demand for electric vehicles. When it comes to the devices and the products that do use lithium ion batteries, buying refurbished is a good alternative to buying a brand new product. For example, there are lots of websites where you can buy refurbished devices in Australia, but one example is trade.com.au, and they also have a few blogs with just information about buying refurbished phones and devices and things like that. So if you want to check that out, or just search engine your refurbished devices in your area.
And go ahead. Oh, no, I was going to say, we were going to mention as well, we will be mentioning some companies and or websites, et cetera, that we have deemed to be better. And that doesn't mean that there might be, you know, companies outside or websites are even better than the ones we mentioned. And also want to mention, none of these are paid ads. They're just ones we've genuinely found to be better than some of the alternatives. And yeah, I know, yeah, definitely plenty of place online. You can get the refurbished or secondhand phones. I know even there are physical stores as well. Yeah. I remember seeing one in Brunswick. So there definitely are around where if you're not sort of don't like buying stuff online, want to see a physical thing, there are, depending where you live, there are stores that you can buy them from too.
Look around for that. I think another thing we should be doing is just looking after our devices, keeping them till the end of their lifetime and extending their lifetime. So a few tips for this, but you can search for more comprehensive things to do, but keeping your device clean and cool, updating the software, keeping your battery charge between 20% and 80%, using your original charger, only fast charging sparingly when you need to, and keeping at least about 20% free storage in your device are all things that extend the lifespan of your phone and specifically the battery. In my experience, the battery is the thing that seems to go down first, and that is the thing that contains the cobalt. So,
and I remember the old days, like the old Nokias, you could just literally put in a new battery yourself, right?
Yeah,
like you could just open the phone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Although I guess in this case, replacing the battery is the part of the issue.
I mean, like, cobalt's not the only unethically sourced material in a phone.
Yeah.
So anything you can do to extend the lifespan, even if it's changing the battery out when the battery's scumped, you're still...
Yeah. Yes. And then once you do get to the end of, when you get to the point where you do need to upgrade your device, if you can sell, donate, or recycle your old device, that's a really good step to take. So if you've still got a functioning device and you need to replace it, you can sell it if it's if it's worth anything, or donating it. For example, I found that there's a website or a program called DV Safe Phone. They provide donated phones to people experiencing domestic violence who might not be safe, kind of, you know, contacting helplines and things like that on their regular phone. And so that can be a good place to send your phone if you've still got a somewhat functioning phone. Another company called Glee Givers provides laptops to children, school children who can't afford their own. And then if your phone isn't functioning at all, or your device isn't functioning at all, recycle it so that the minerals in your phone can be used, and we're kind of reducing the need for new minerals to be mined. So just an example is Mobile Muster in Australia recycles old phones.
And how do you find them? I think you can do it at Officeworks, can't you? But yeah, without promoting companies. But yeah, there are a bunch of places you can drop them.
You can check out the mobilemuster.com.au website for drop-off locations. That it might be that you can mail it to them, or I think various shops and things like that.
I feel like that's another one. Search engines will be your friend.
Depending
on where you are, you'll be able to find the best thing for recycling using a search engine rather than us telling you.
And I'll put we'll put links in the show notes, I think, for everything that we mention. I think it's just important beyond that to stay informed. And if a larger workers' movement from DRC or like official boycotts do arise for particular companies, just be ready to support those actions, because unfortunately, it's been really great to see how the Palestine movement has grown in the last few years, despite the, you know, the terrible situation that led to that. I don't think we're yet in that kind of situation with DRC where there's you know, a really global movement happening. But I think talking about it, staying informed, doing what we can, will kind of, you know, create the you know, make us ready for if a global movement does arise and supporting that.
And I'll just add as well that in terms of the ethical side of hardware, if you do have to buy something new, also just making sure, or if you're fortunate enough to be in the position where you can do so, try and get something that will last. Don't buy a cheap thing that's likely to break or will have a short lifespan. If you're buying something new, think about the resources that go into that and think into the future and think, well, I want this thing to last. I want to be able to use it for a number of years, and try and do some research and get something that will be of good quality and you're not going to need to replace quickly or throw in the trash because it's broken.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are you ready for the first song?
Yeah.
Which one do we want to go for? I thought we'd do. There's a Spotify song, so it depends if we're going to get onto Spotify or we can keep that for later if you want to keep the Spotify stuff for later. Where do you?
No, we're going to talk about software now so we can play that.
Okay, yeah. So this is. Or anything you want to say about the song, Hayden?
It's called Spotify Loves Ice, and probably a little less relevant for Australia, but the song. It is about how this rapper and his friends were hanging out, listening to Spotify, and then Spotify started playing some ICE songs. And so ICE are the immigration police in the USA who just kidnap people off the streets, racial profile. You've probably heard of them. They're awful. And this person and his friends were just horrified that Spotify plays ICE ads.
And I just mentioned the song contains some swearing, and I did also see that this song is available on Spotify. Not from Spotify, but anyway. Here we go. Welcome back to our summer special on 3CR Community Radio. We've got Lottie, Hayden and Nick today discussing ethical tech, or trying to be more ethical about our tech anyway. We played the song Spotify Loves Ice by Dope Knife. And I just wanted to mention that when we're talking about Spotify, one group I've kind of been following a little bit are the United Musicians and Allied Workers. I don't know if either of you have heard about them, but they're pushing for basically, a living wage for musicians and like better remuneration, more money from musicians from the music they put on streaming services like Spotify. But anyway, there was Hayden alluded to this before the song, but Spotify did stop the ads are running for ICE, basically due to like a public campaign against that. But they said they've only said that the ads have ended, not that it was wrong. So they basically like kind of caved into public pressure, but they haven't at all said they'll never do it again or that that's their policy. So they're kind of leaving the door open. They could start doing it again if the public pressure backs off. But anyway, perhaps we'll go back to them. But I'll hand over to Hayden to talk a bit about Spotify and other apps.
Yeah, so now for this kind of half of the episode, we're going to be moving on from hardware, or a bit more from hardware, and talking more about software and kind of how we can ethically handle the software. So that's kind of like the programs, apps, operating systems, all those non-tangible things that are associated with technology. And so when we talk about this space, we're kind of going to be focusing on kind of the big tech companies, so a little bit on Spotify, but mainly on groups like Microsoft, Facebook/Meta, Google/Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, and kind of talking about why you should be trying to avoid using their services if you can. I know a lot of them are monopolies and ubiquitous, and it can be hard to kind of extract yourself from their tangled webs, but Lottie is going to talk through some alternatives that she's found, and I'll just start off giving some reasons why, if you weren't aware, these companies are awful. And so we were just talking about Spotify, so I will start with them, and I think also, just to note, I feel like Spotify of all these companies is probably the easiest one for you to move away from and just stop using their services ever. It's not so embedded in all these different networks that you have to use them. And to be honest, there are other alternatives out there that work better than Spotify and can be cheaper and are just much ethically better. And so, as Nick alluded to, one of the biggest things with Spotify is that they pay musicians almost nothing. So of all the major music platforms, they pay by far the least. So they pay less than half of what even other major platforms such as Apple Music or Tidal will pay to artists. And there are some like apps you can use which will pay like more than three times what Spotify pays per stream. Beyond that,
Can I maybe jump in on that? Because that's probably a good time to mention again. I mentioned the United Musicians and Allied Workers. So this is quite US-centric, but I do think there could be other similar actions in other countries, Australia and elsewhere as well. But thinking about the way in which, boycotting is something we can do, but we can also kind of try and change the practices of these apps as well, which is what this is focused on. So again, US focus is encouraging people to write a letter to the members of Congress, urging them to co-sponsor the Living Wage for Musicians Act. And so this is basically built to pay artists a minimum of a penny per stream. Like that's what they, which again, Hayden touched on, they're actually getting less than that. An amount calculated specifically to provide a working class artist a living wage from streaming. This has got some momentum. So, it was introduced in March 24, the member Tlaib and Bauman. In 2025, New York City Council passed a resolution supporting this, and Detroit City Council passed a similar resolution in November 2025. So we'll put a link up to that. Again, that is more US-centric for anyone listening in the US. But again, I think there is... definitely, again, I think that's sort of a bit of a model for what other things we could be doing as well as the individual boycotts.
As an individual, I mean, it's very easy to switch an app and mm-hmm. you'll be paying artists much more.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that the owner of Spotify is his very right wing. He's not American, but he's a big Trump supporter. They've invested hundreds of millions of dollars into companies that develop military strike drones and artificial intelligence for weapon systems. So lots of musicians have been boycotting Spotify because of that. That's a very recent thing. And we're probably all aware of the fact that Spotify, despite paying musicians almost nothing, pays tens of millions of dollars to right-wing influencers like Joe Rogan and Alex Jones to host their podcasts exclusively on Spotify and spread... like COVID misinformation, right-wing propaganda, all those awful things.
I knew about Joe Rogan. I didn't know that Alex Jones as well. He got booted off just about everything a while ago, but he's back on Spotify.
Sure if he's on Spotify now, but Spotify was a big platform for him.
Yeah.
And I believe that they were very happy to have him and the get the streams he brings in.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I think Spotify is a bit less... integrated than the other ones, but I'll quickly jump through a brief run through of some of the awful things to do with Microsoft, Meta, which is Facebook, Apple, Google, and Amazon. And just to note, we could spend an hour every week for the next 10 years talking about all the awful things these companies do. So like each of them has a Wikipedia page that's about an encyclopedia long of just of all the bad things they've done. So if you want to know more, just do your own research. You can find websites. You can find podcasts. People have talked about this.
I'm also going to share some websites as well.
Ad nauseum. Yep. So one concern for all of them is privacy. Just about all of these companies have been harvesting user data, using it for either selling it off in the case of companies like Facebook or Amazon, or they are harvesting it, using it to train AIs. So recently Google started introducing a feature where you have to actively turn it off if you don't want them scraping your emails, your photos, things like this, that to train their AI.
I only just heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Apple uses things like your conversations with Siri to train its AI. You know, these companies will use that data, have shared user data with the NSA, which is the American spy agency, essentially, and which was spying on everyone around the world using the data gathered through our devices. So that's voice recordings, messages, search history, all those things that they provide over to the American government. Another thing that all of them have in common, if we're talking about horrible labor practices and slavery, is just about all of these companies are tied to the use of forced labor by Uyghurs in China. So if you're less across this, it hasn't had that much media attention probably in the last couple of years since the Palestinian conflict has flared up. But China is essentially trying to do a genocide against the Uyghur people in China, and they put them in forced labor camps. And a bunch of tech companies, a bunch of companies around the world use parts sourced from those forced labor camps. And so all these big tech companies have been linked to that. Speaking of Palestine, Israel, we've got, so Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google have all been linked to providing services to the Israeli Defense Forces in terms of artificial intelligence, targeting for drones, identifying like targets, all these kinds of things, providing services to help the Israeli Defense Force more effectively kill and target Palestinians. All of them are linked to that. So there's a lot of information about why you should be boycotting all those companies because of their ties to Israel.
Did that exclude Apple?
That did exclude Apple.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep.
So Apple, yep, as far as I can tell, hasn't collaborated with the Israeli military, which is a pretty low bar to clear, but they've cleared that. Mm-hmm. But Apple does have, of all those companies, the strongest ties with the mining of cobalt in the Congo, which Letty talked about, and has constantly been linked to like child slavery and horrible mining practices there. Yeah, each of those companies also is involved in union busting and just being absolutely awful to employees, doing things like having people on like short-term or casual contracts so they don't have to pay them benefits. We all know about Amazon not like being so strict with people that they can't even take toilet breaks and they have to piss and shit in bottles. Yeah, they all collectively have done things like campaigned against privacy legislation, campaigned against environmental legislation. So when we're talking about AI or the huge servers that these companies have to hold all of the personal information they're collecting, that uses a huge amount of resources, and all of them have been criticized for environmental destruction and for lobbying against environmental regulation. Yeah, it's I'm really grouping them together because it's a lot of the same issues with all of them. Other things that they do, they will collaborate with repressive governments. So, for instance, in China, Russia, Turkey, to censor content within those countries. A lot of them do that in India as well. For instance, censoring internet content within or about Kashmir and the repression by the government there. Just as I said, you could fill a library with all the bad things these companies have done. So that's just kind of a quick dip my toe in the water to kind of give some context about why we should be looking for alternatives. I think that's not even getting into the awfulness of the founders of those companies, things like they're running monopolies, which is really bad for local economies, for other companies, you know, tax avoidance, the right-wing misinformation that they are contributing to, and polarization, extremism. I just want to shout out to Facebook for the number of genocides that they've facilitated, just because, you know, I've talked about the amount of genocides they're all involved in, but Facebook, it's a special mention, because if you look into it, Facebook has facilitated a lot of genocides. So, you know, you can do some research. Myanmar, Ethiopia, wherever you want to go, Facebook will help you do a genocide. So
through the misinformation, is that what you mean?
No, they don't provide moderation in a lot of languages outside of English, or if they do, it's very scant. And they know that essentially groups are using Facebook to organize like pogroms and also to kind of put out propaganda against minority groups. And Facebook essentially doesn't do anything to stop it. They just so it's not really that they are actively involved in these. They just know they're happening and do nothing to prevent them from being organized using Facebook's platforms.
Yeah. Should we go to your song, Lottie, before we go to the final section? So, do you want to, this is Heavy Foot, do you have anything you want to say about the song?
It's just about the horrors of capitalism and trying to fight back and stay strong.
Yep, sounds like a relevant one, and you're listening to our summer special here on 3CR Community Radio. Welcome back to our summer special here on 3CR Radical Radio. We're discussing ethical tech, and I'll hand it over to Lottie for the final section.
Yeah, so for this final section, I'm just going to be talking through some ways we can try to disentangle ourselves from the monopolies that the tech monopolies that Hayden talked about: Meta, Google, Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Spotify. But really, the point I'd also like to make is that like Hayden said, we could talk about bad practices of those companies for hours, and we could talk about other monopolies that are out there too. So don't think that what we're talking about is limited to those companies. I think some other examples of terrible companies with terrible practices that we haven't even touched on are OpenAI, ChatGPT, Uber, Netflix, all have their own kind of issues. And I guess as if any of those companies do kind of become ousted by another monopoly, that they're probably just going to have the same kind of issues. So the point isn't just like, oh, let's just all move towards some other monopoly. We want to we don't want these tech monopolies to exist, so we kind of want to divest across different companies, I think. And I think a couple other points to make is we hear the saying that there's no ethical consumption under capitalism, and I think that, well, that's definitely true. I agree with that. As long as we're under this capitalist system, these companies are going to be incentivized to maximize their profit will exploit people and animals and the environment to that end. But I don't think it's, we shouldn't let that make us feel hopeless and feel like that there's, we can never be perfect, so there's no point making any changes. I think the practical actions that I'm kind of recommending today are still worthwhile.
Not about being ethical, but being more ethical, more or closer ethical. To ethical.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So what I've been doing, I guess in the last year or so, I've been trying to move away from some of these companies. Almost a year ago, I left Facebook and Instagram and have mostly stopped using WhatsApp. And now I'm kind of in the process of moving away from Microsoft and Google.
Yeah, I just want to jump in and say, in case people didn't know, WhatsApp is owned by Facebook.
Yep. And deleted my Netflix account the other week and have moved from Spotify. So I'm kind of in this process. And so I just wanted to share some of the strategies of how that's been going. I think that one thing to consider if you want to try and follow this is not to be a purist. So, there's not going to be any like perfect companies out there, but I think from what Hayden has said, there are like clearly worse companies. You don't necessarily need to you can do it step by step. So I think it might feel like an overwhelming undertaking. Don't be frozen by the scale of the issue, even if you can just leave Facebook or leave Spotify or whatever you can do. Start with that, and then, you know, try and keep momentum going, but don't feel overwhelmed that you can't even start. So now I'm just going to list a few different products that we use and or like different applications, programs that we use, and some better alternatives to those monopolies. And so starting off for our Messenger apps. So if you're using Facebook Messenger or WhatsApp, a good alternative to move to is Signal. So Signal's privacy is much better. It's not one of these big, it's not owned by any of the big tech monopolies. Telegram is okay, but I've been using that, but as far as I know, it's a little iffy. So it's actually not, it's not end-to-end encrypted like Signal is, unless you have secret disappearing chats, and their CEO is a bit weird, so you might want to look into that. So I think Signal is a good way to go there. For email, there are a few different options that have better privacy, but Proton is the one I've moved towards, so you might look into that. I'm going to include mention some websites they'll have kind of more options. If you want to look more comprehensively into the different options that are out there, I'm kind of just going to quickly go just give a few options. Social media, I mean, honestly, I think we can just move away from social media entirely, honestly. It's less crucial to our lives than messaging each other or emailing each other, for example. But Blue Sky and Mastodon are some options that are better than X, Meta, etc. For photos and storage, Proton offers these services. There's also Ente, which is a good option for documents. So, like, you know, the equivalent to Microsoft Word and Excel and things like that. Proton is in its beta version providing these services. I think Libre is another one that's out there that's better than Microsoft and Apple.
I just would say it's a bit unfortunate because Microsoft is so ubiquitous with operating systems and with word processing. That is a hard one to move away from.
It's a hard one, but see if any of the other options that are out there kind of work for you. For browsers and search engines, Firefox is a better alternative to Chrome, Microsoft Edge, Safari, I would say. But I think, a few other even better options in terms of privacy are DuckDuckGo and Ecosia. Those are two that I use that I
quite
like. For search
engines, yep.
For search engines. And they even have browsers. At least on Android phone. Okay. So you can look into that. So for music, I have moved across to Qobuz, which is spelled Qobuz. There was Brian Merchant has a Substack that I'll share in the show notes. He put out a blog that compared all the different music streaming services. Qobuz does actually pay, so a penny is a cent, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so they pay artists more
than
over a cent per stream. So that's what Nick was saying is the ask of the artists in the US. So they pay artists the most. And what that Substack by Brian Merchant actually revealed to me, which was the thing that was stopping me from moving from Spotify for so long, is that there are actually really easy services that make it really easy to transfer all your music library from Spotify to Qobuz or whatever platform you're moving to or from or to. And so that took me like less than a day. And so I've been really happy with Qobuz. Yeah.
I will say that some people might be concerned about the music libraries, but pretty much all the apps have a pretty comprehensive library now. So you're not going to struggle to find the music you want to listen to.
Yep. Yep. For podcasts, I use a program, an app called Podcast Addict. I think there might be other options out there, but I actually just have always used that app and really like it. I don't listen to that many, and I don't purchase audiobooks, so I don't have experience on apps like Audible, for example, but I have heard that Libro FM is a good alternative, and they actually let you purchase your audiobooks through your local bookselling retailer that you can choose, and you actually get to own the sound file, download the MP3, unlike
Amazon Audible, doesn't let you own any of the files for books or anything get, and they can take them away at any time. You don't have a choice in that.
Exactly. So it sounds like Libro FM is a good option. When I do listen to audiobooks, I do it through my local library. So Libby and BorrowBox are the two apps that kind of connect to my local library, and I listen to audiobooks through there. So I think it's always good to support your library. I'll just mention that Proton also has an authenticator, a VPN, and a wallet, so you can move away from Google Authenticator, Google Wallet, for example. Instead of Google Translate, there is a website called Lingva, Lingva, that seems to work pretty well. For a calendar, I've moved across to Proton. They don't yet have to-do lists, so I'm still in the process of looking for an alternative there. And I think Proton is going to introduce that, so I'll see what happens there. For your books,
we
want to wrap up.
For
books, if you're buying from Kindle, then Kobo is a good alternative.
Kobo is an e-reader that's an e-reading company, and they're much better than Amazon.
Yeah, so if you want to buy an e-reader, buy a Kobo instead of a Kindle or another alternative. Storygraph is an alternative to Goodreads, where you can log all of your books.
And it lets you rate in between the stars, unlike Goodreads.
Yep. I think I'll leave it there. And there's a few different resources that we'll put in the show notes. So really comprehensive, kind of going into much more detail than I was able to on how to kind of move away from these companies are The Opt-Out Project, Roots of Change, Liminal Works, Bryant Merchant's Blood in the Machine Substack, Paris Marx and his blog Disconnect, Rise Against Big Tech, May 1st, Electronic Frontier Foundation, Privacy Guides, and the Boycott app that I mentioned before. So I'll include links to all of them in the show notes. And I think, I really encourage you to do a bit more research and think more about this.
All right. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for putting all this together. We better make way. Rotations are coming in live, so stay tuned for that to hear some music with different themes. We'll be back with one more summer special next week and then back to Freedom of Species on the 25th. So the final song, which is one that was chosen by Hayden, is Robot Writes a Love Song by Pup. So enjoy the song. Thanks everyone for listening, and make sure you stay tuned for Rotations if you're listening live.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.